This podcast is sponsored by InstaRead, an app made for people interested in personal development and growth. I'll talk more about their exciting offer for listeners later on. But now, let's go into the episode. Hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast, your weekly dose of inspiration and exploration. Join me, your host, Sam Harris, as I discover how mindset can help you do incredible things through my conversations with the world's most interesting people, from tech billionaires to leading scientists, best-selling authors to notorious hackers. The goal is to increase our collective wisdom and attitudes to make us all happier and healthier, wiser and wealthier. Who doesn't want that? On the podcast today, we have Richard Chapo, a business lawyer in San Diego who has been practicing law for 25 years. In that time, he has started many businesses and helped countless other businesses with legal and growth problems. He has a huge bank of stories and insights from these experiences. I really enjoyed the conversation and Richard's attitude to solving his own problems by acquiring skills to do something that would just fit the lifestyle that he wanted to live. So we start the conversation finding out what sort of clients Richard normally works with.
I work with online businesses, help them grow and meet their compliance obligations and fend off various disputes for them.
Okay. What's like a typical kind of client for you?
They range from small bloggers to large multinational corporations who are typically trying to tap the U.S. market, whether they're here or they're in another country, and they're trying to figure out how to do that. Everything from how do they comply with the various laws to how do they set up bank accounts and move money in and out, and what are tax obligations and all those kinds of things. You know, with the EU, you have the whole GDPR mess now and things of that sort. So tend to work with businesses in the U.S. who are trying to comply with that as well. So a lot of that area.
Cool. What's an untypical client that's been like really interesting that you're actually allowed to talk about?
Attorney-client privilege, can't talk about too many of them, but it's usually somebody who comes up with a unique idea, particularly a product. And I've had some clients come up with some pretty bizarre things that, quite honestly, a couple of times I thought, I don't think you're going to do anything with this, and they did. And one of the beauties of the internet, as I'm sure you're well aware, is it really evens out the playing field. You can have people get into business niches that can radically change for relatively cheap, even if they're huge multinational corporations. And the internet really kind of flattens that out. So, for example, there are large video game companies out there. Their stock prices and their valuations are getting crushed because they sell video games, Call of Duty or whatever, and they have all these uploads, and there are all these upsells within it. And that model is being attacked now because so many people are playing free video games, and then you're seeing so many popular options out there. So a company like Activision, lost half of its value in the last like 6 months. This company that launched the new game really kind of came from nowhere, and yet they've completely dominated the market for the last 6 months. So you tend to see a lot of that. You see a lot of it on the infrastructure side for the internet, which is a boring subject matter for most people, but you'll see companies come out and do things that'll deal with video compression that are pretty revolutionary. And it's often people, sitting in their garage and suddenly Facebook or whoever snapping them up for a huge amount of money, not because they have that value, but because those companies can see what value there's going to be in those products and those services in the future.
Cool. What made you go into being a lawyer?
I was actually in college. I was traveling around and I was in Denmark, of all places, about to get married to a Danish girl. My family was having some objections to that. And so one thing led to another and they didn't get along and it all kind of fell apart. But then I got the idea that, well, I wanted to get into a profession where I could travel a lot. And at the time, this is 1992, that kind of boiled down to a number of areas that aren't really available now. One of them was international law. Theory was that I would travel around the world, meeting with clients all over the place and so on and so forth. So I went to law school for that. But of course, by 1998, they had this thing called the internet now, and you don't have to travel to people. So that kind of died on the vine. I ended up defending hospitals and doctors in wrongful death cases where the patients had died. Did that for about 10 years. That got really old. A year off, went to Russia and then came back and had a friend who'd become CEO of an internet company. He ended up hiring me to do their work. And this is very early on, so very much a learning process. But I've been doing this ever since then. The reason I stuck with this mostly is that a lot of law, you're tearing down things, but this niche, you're seeing people grow things. So it's kind of interesting. Well, it's pretty rewarding actually to sit around and watch some of your clients, you know, over 10 years go from literally nobodies to, you know, people that are well known or offering products or services that are pretty amazing. So
cool. What would you say is the biggest mistake that people make?
Probably not doing due diligence. So as you grow, you put out quality products or services, things like that. People always want to team up with you. And there are a lot of shysters out there who will, you know, will run crazy with your information. Because a lot of these people, whether it's the business or an individual, they're establishing a brand. And if you go out there and somebody misuses that brand, either through really aggressive email advertising or something of that sort, it can do a massive amount of damage to your business. A lot of people online, it's very much, well, he or she seems cool or something like that. And that's the basis for going into business with each other. And it really needs to be, you know, something more than that. I see it when it blows up, basically. So, and then suddenly, like, why'd you do business with this guy who's been in jail, you know, 20 times for fraud? Well, I didn't know. I mean, it's that kind of a thing. The other thing is a lack of focus. The web, there's just so much information. So many different gurus. A lot of people, they don't focus on exactly what they're trying to do, and they get kind of distracted by the glittery things. There's a lot of good information. It's just that there's a lot of different ways to do things. Instead of picking on one and focusing and committing to it, suddenly they're doing five different things and doing none of them well can kind of diffuse the business growth. So focusing sometimes is a big issue.
Do you see a lot of founder dispute?
Yes, you see it all the time. Problem is people go into business and they don't put anything in writing. You really want to have something in writing beforehand because it's going to tell you what happens if one of the partners stops showing up or starts performing or becomes a drug addict or whatever it is. And a lot of people don't do that. And I understand why. I mean, they're starting a business. They haven't made a dollar. So, you know, who wants to spend money on a lawyer? But that is very common. At least in the States, we have tons of what are called zombie partners, where it's a business that has two partners that are working and one that isn't. They fired him, so they're not paying a salary, but he owns part of the business. So every time they kick out profits, he gets part of it and gets the other partners like you wouldn't believe.
I bet.
Yeah, just a bit. But yeah. The problem is the only way to get them out is to go to court, go through a full-blown trial, and that becomes expensive. And usually the end result is something nobody's happy about.
Yeah, that's funny.
Experience there?
Not as in within my own business, but yeah, I've met a few people who have had that and got close to that happening, but it didn't happen, so I was lucky. Could have been a lot worse. What's your favorite topic to deal with when it comes to legal things? Like when you get a client saying, oh, I've got this problem, you're like, oh yes, this is so awesome.
You know, it's usually not so much of a problem, but they've recognized that they've grown to a point where they don't know what the next step is. So you're really sitting down and putting together a plan for, okay, how do we get beyond this burden? What'll happen a lot is you'll get a business that's run by one or two or three people, and they'll start doing these different things and YouTube channel or, you know, Instagram or whatever. And they get to a point where they're doing everything, but now they're working 70 or 80 hours a week. And it's time to start thinking of it less as this is my business and more this is a business, and start farming stuff out to people so that they can actually have a life. And that's a very hard step for a lot of people because you put your blood, sweat, and tears into it. And I mean, in this case, you know, with your podcast, you know, if it goes big and suddenly you're getting swamped with high-end guests and everything else, how are you going to deal with the time issues? Do you need a producer? Do you need all these things? Well, you're giving up control to some extent. And that's very, very difficult for people. So helping them with that is actually enjoyable because typically when they're at that point, once they take that next step, the business explodes because they're freeing up their time and they go back to doing more of what originally made them successful, which is focusing on the aspects of the business that they enjoy and not doing the parts that they don't like, you know, like talking to lawyers. So that's probably my favorite thing.
Ah, cool. Yeah, it's definitely something I'm kind of going through at the moment of trying to focus more on just doing the interviewing part, which I'm good at, and doing less of the editing and all the other stuff.
Right.
Takes so much time.
Some people define success that way. They say, what's success? Success is I don't have to do the parts of the business I don't like.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, so something to be said for that.
Definitely. Yeah, that's cool. What's your favorite question to ask people when you're with a client or anyone?
Well, if I'm with a client, it's typically, where do you see yourself in 5 years? If it's just a normal person, it's typically, what are you reading?
Yeah.
Because, okay. People are reading tells you quite a bit about, you know, their interests and potentially their level of thought.
Yes, true. So what are you eating?
No, reading, not eating.
Oh, reading. Okay. Yes. Some people do think about what they're eating. I think everyone does. But yeah, what are you reading?
I'm reading The Complete Turtle Trader, which is a investment book. But I don't know if you're old enough to know about this movie. It was some of the stories, Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy. And they, Dan Aykroyd worked at an investment firm, a very high-end investment firm. And the two partners in the investment firm bet whether they could take somebody off the street and teach them how to trade commodities and basically make a bunch of money. Well, it turns out that happened in real life. And there was a commodity trader in Chicago, and the two of the partners were arguing over, was it a gift to be able to trade commodities or was it something that could be taught? And they put out an ad and they brought in like 23 people. And for 2 weeks, the one partner taught them how to trade commodities. And then they gave each of them $100,000 and let them trade. Turned out 20 of them made money and 3 of them didn't. They didn't make like a little money. They made a lot of money. It's a fascinating book because it shows people looking at the idea of gift versus more of a technical approach to something, which you see on the internet as well. You know, some people have a gift for growing their band, but other people are doing it more from just a technical, these are the 10 steps I'm going to follow approach. So then I spent a month hunting around trying to find the rules that they followed, and I eventually found them, but then they went out of, they're not effective anymore because of automated trading. So I had visions I was going to be wildly rich, but you know.
That's funny. But yeah, remember them saying like, stock picking, like most investment bankers aren't actually any more effective than monkeys throwing darts.
I want to say the 80s, where they literally had monkeys throw darts at, you know, a paper that listed all of the investments and everything. Yeah, the monkeys had a better return.
Cool. So on the subject of automated trading, what do you think about the future of automated legal? And in 5 years' time, what do you think the legal profession will be like?
It's already changing. And I think the traditional design was you would have a law firm where you would have partners, then you would have associates and interns. The interns were in law school. And if you did a sufficient job as an intern and kissed up to the right people, you would get a job as an associate. And then as an associate, depending on the firm, you would either work your way up to partner or you would be trained first. So some law firms would actually just say, okay, ignore everything you heard in law school. Here's how it really works. And they would teach you, you know, whatever your niche was. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. With the automated processing, a lot of that's going to change, and it already is, because you can use automated systems to do research for motions you're going to file for trial and things of that sort. So the associate position is kind of under attack, as is the overall business model. We've seen some huge law firms in Europe and in the US who failed basically because their business model wasn't really, you know, meeting the needs of clients anymore. And I imagine there'll be more of that. Predicting where the field is going to go is somewhat difficult, though, because at least in the States, we're licensed by state, not federally. And the licensing groups in each state, they're very territorial. So the idea that we're going to have automated legal practices online is kind of utopian, because they've already started suing different groups that are going in that direction, saying that the unauthorized practice of law, you're not a licensed attorney, you can't provide these services. And you would have the usual disputes, except that claim comes also with criminal implications. So it's not even just that you're held liable, it's that you also go to jail. Yeah. So that kind of cools the jets for a lot of people, as you might imagine. But yes, no, it is going to change. And I mean, you see the LegalZooms of the world and that kind of thing. And so, you know, where that all ends up is kind of the $50 million question, or probably more than that.
Cool. So you worried that you might have your job automated in the next sort of 10 years, 5 years?
Not too worried about mine, just because I'm very niche oriented. Like if you do estate planning, a will is a will, a trust is a trust. There's really not that much, you know, you can really automate that. What I do, I don't really kick out a lot of documents. Mine's more advice oriented, so I'm not as worried about it. I guess it is somewhat of a concern, but nothing too much. I mean, typically with the automation, they're going to go for areas where there's going to be volume, because I mean, obviously they want to make money. Makes sense. So I would think, you know, if you're in estate planning, you're probably pretty worried. Some contracts, independent contracts, you're kind of worried as well. But yeah, for what I do, probably not. I'm sure eventually it'll get eliminated. But you know, I'm over 50, so hopefully it'll stay around until I, you know. Kick off here one of these days.
So on the 5 years time question, you see yourself doing similar stuff?
Yeah, probably. You know, I have some other businesses, of course, hoping one of those will blow up. But yeah, probably doing the same thing. I'm pretty happy with it. Not so much from the content of what I do, but the lifestyle. So most lawyers will work 60, 70 hours a week, and I only work 40, maybe.
Nice. That's right.
And I'm very lucky in that sense. The problem with that is if I ever had a problem, you know, with the practice or picking up enough clients, I would have to go back to a traditional firm. And I'm not sure I could hack it at this point. I'd probably, you know, be there on day two with a gun shooting everybody. And so it does have that downside to it. But most lawyers I know would kill for what I do. So I'm very lucky, very fortunate. And I realize as much. Yes. How about yourself? What do you see yourself doing in 5 years?
Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I changed so much. It's difficult one to really be accurate on, but definitely running businesses, doing the podcast. Yeah. I really like the podcast. I'm excited to have like, you know, like 500 episodes under my belt and be like, wow, I'm a beast at this. So that'd be good.
Well, we'll compliment you. You're the first podcast I've done in a long time, other than with comedians, that's actually unique.
Yeah.
Most of the podcasts are, you know, here's your one sheet and let's go down these questions, and I can do that with my eyes closed. And so in that sense, you know, compliment you on what you're trying to do. Cool. At least with a different format.
Yeah. I do need to make more of a specific, what is the reason that you listen to this podcast? It's more just following my interests. Of like, I'll ask people whatever I feel like I'm interested in at the time, which is nice for me, but it's a bit of a hard one to sort of exactly explain why someone should listen to the podcast.
But I mean, Joe Rogan, I mean,
true.
Talks to everybody, you know.
Yeah, because I am more kind of like, yeah, these guys, but then they're already famous.
Well, it's true, but I mean, you know, that doesn't mean.
Thanks, man. So, yeah, like the first 6 months, I got like 1,000 downloads total. And then, like a year and 6 months in now, I get like 30,000 a month, which is a good growth curve.
I was going to say, not too bad. Yeah. A 30 banger, as we call it. Yeah.
But yeah, how did a setback or a failure set you up for later success?
I owned a internet marketing and SEO company that worked in the real estate and mortgage business field. And here in the States, 2008, that whole industry collapsed and I got wiped out in that. It was literally just lost all the business in like a month.
Wow.
Yeah, it was ugly. The real estate market here just died. The Great Recession and all that kind of thing. A lot of people got hurt. So that kind of taught me not to get too excited about business success. Also not to get too crushed by if you're having problems in a business. Be a little more level-headed. I had a partner and we were actually getting ready to sell everything. And we're going to travel around the world and just work off of laptops. You know, nice hotels, not in a backpack. literally just before we did that, the market crashed. I mean, it was just unreal. And we ended up stuck with huge amounts of debt and everything else. And it was just a complete nightmare. Yeah, I mean, we got it all right, but it was a big eye-opener.
Yeah.
I think you learn more probably from the failures, even though we didn't necessarily do anything wrong. We were just growing, you know, and we had some debt associated with the growth. We weren't like blowing it on cars or anything. But when the market just disappeared, I mean, literally, we lost all of our clients in a month, 150 clients who were paying us at least minimum 10 grand a piece. And it was just gone. And they were all going into bankruptcy. And because what happened was most of them were mortgage brokers at the time writing their own mortgages. So they were getting credit lines from large financial institutions. And then they would use that credit line to write the mortgages. And then what happened is once the recession hit a certain point, you know, some of the larger banks failed, the financial institutions pulled all those credit lines. So the mortgage brokers immediately had no money, couldn't pay our bills. And we had outstanding debts on, you know, server farms to, you know, an office building and things of that sort. And now suddenly we have no money coming in. There was a few sleepless nights. So that was certainly a lesson.
The question was, how did that set you up for a later success?
Well, I think that the subsequent businesses that I've started, you know, I'm a little conservative as to the debt that I'll carry. I'm also a little more conservative about getting euphoric over growth. I have one that's doing very well, but you know, I'm always looking at it a little more calmly now as to just maybe, you know, growth won't be consistent for the rest of, you know, the life of the business. And I need to think about, well, what if things go sideways? I've also made sure that the businesses are in niches that are less likely to be crushed suddenly. It's less likely that the clients would just all disappear. They're based on, you know, legal requirements and compliance processes. So for instance, I won the DMCA agent service. And under copyright law in the U.S., online businesses need to designate an agent to receive copyright complaints. Well, that copyright law has been around since 1998, and that's probably never going to change. I mean, maybe in 50 years or something like that. So the chances of, you know, the business being radically altered in any way or that environment, unlike the real estate, you know, industry, is infinitesimal. But even then, carry almost no debt on that business. You go down that nightmare again. So the planning is a little bit different.
Cool. Okay. What would you say the growth mindset means to you? Like, how have you cultured a growth mindset?
As strange as it sounds, you know, having the business failure in 2009 was probably the biggest impetus to growth. It gave me a much more realistic view. At that point, particularly on the internet, you know, you could almost put up anything and it would grow. So having kind of a better balance of mentality coming out of that really probably helped me. But I think the growth mindset is really just you know, people say focus on something that makes you happy. And I just think that's, I just disagree with that. I think focus on something that makes you interested, you know, because you're not going to be happy all the time. I mean, I wish you were, and I wish unicorns existed and what have you, but the reality of it is, and there are going to be days you wake up where you're just feeling less than excited. But if it's something that you're interested in, you know, then there's always going to be some area that you can deal with. And I think growth happens naturally. I think the other thing, as we've already talked about, is as you grow, trying to contract out the things that you don't like about a business, because there's always going to be those aspects. And if you can do that, then you can keep focus on the things you're interested in, and that'll just foster growth. I mean, I guess it depends on what growth mindset means to different people. But to me, it means staying interested in what you're in and staying focused on what it is. And that's generally the way that I look at it. I wish I had some grand statement about it, but I don't really. It's mostly just, you know, how do you continue moving forward?
Don't invalidate yourself. That was great. No, that was cool. That was quite useful. I wrote that down. I was like, yes, this is definitely right. I need to do this with my life. Cool.
There you go.
Thanks. So you said you started lots of businesses. How do you go about finding business partners?
I usually started myself. The only time I've had business partners are typically people that I've worked with previously. Mm. So I had the marketing company. My partner was a programmer, so we kind of fit perfectly. At that time, doing SEO on Google was, you know, not very difficult. It was mostly accumulate as many links as you could if you went. But he was a programmer, so it tied in nicely. We each had our little niche that we could do it. But I had used him for years. He'd done all my legal websites and things of that sort and apps and stuff. So I already knew him. So I had a pretty comfortable, you know, understanding with that. I usually don't go out and just pick random people to be new partners. I think a lot of people do, and it kind of surprises me. If you're looking for a partner for a business, you know, particularly where there's going to be a big capital expense and you don't have the money for it, always look at the people that you already work with. Because if you have vendors that do things, you know, that would fall within that niche, well, you already have experience with them. Otherwise, kind of blind dating. If you're going out for random people, and it's sometimes it goes well and sometimes it doesn't. And that's the other thing about businesses. I mean, if you pick up a partner, anybody who's ever formed a business with another partner already knows this, you're getting married. That is essentially a marriage. You're probably going to see that person more than you're going to see your spouse. You need to make sure that, you know, you understand that kind of a commitment and what have you. And, you know, some people are comfortable with it. And some people, you know, when it goes bad, it can be ugly. So,
yeah. Give you some advice, I think. And it's kind of similar to also picking a business area that you already know. So it's generally a bad idea to just try and start an idea that you haven't been in before. It's usually not the wisest thing.
I certainly do a lot of research. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story. When we had that company, the programmer and I, his name was Ted. Ted was telling me one day, I found this keyword with all these massive amount of traffic and almost no competition. So we started looking at it. And it was, the keyword was candy store. Candy store, where people, so we decided, well, screw it, we'll build a quick candy store site and put a bunch of money or anything into it, but we'll just build one, we'll get it ranked number one, and we'll just, you know, Google AdSense or something like that, and
yeah,
you know, pick up some quick hitters. So we built this website, stuck it up there. Sure enough, we got all of these clicks, and nobody clicked through on the ads or anything. And then we found out that candy store was the name of a song by 50 Cent. So it had nothing to do with candy stores. So I was like, probably should look closer at that.
Yeah. Well, just to date you, you got that wrong. It's Candy Shop.
That it was Candy Shop.
I had no idea what you were doing.
Yeah, no, it was, well, that tells you everything about it then.
I remember that song.
Yeah, that's, it was funny. Very funny. We laughed about that for years.
Yeah, but
really brilliant.
Excellent. See, you gave a much better example than I did when I was trying to explain it. Like, yeah, you shouldn't do things you don't know too well. And you just come out with a much better story. Thanks, man. Okay,
yeah, well, so the older you get.
Yeah, more stories and things. It's always really good. What is your earliest memory?
It's not a good one. Burning my hand on a stove.
Yeah. It's a
traumatic event in my early, early life, yes. Pain has a way of...
Yeah, yeah. With major burning, like the whole hand on fire, or just like a little bit of... Like,
palm.
Yeah?
Yeah, left hand palm. I stuck my hand down on the little burners. I don't know what I was doing. Seared a memory into the old brain. Hospital and the whole deal.
Wow.
Looks fine today. I mean, it doesn't look fine, but it's not like, you know, anything horrible. Nobody really comments on it, but some lifelines in the wrong places. So.
Didn't make that mistake again then.
No. Very careful around the stoves.
Ooh. Yeah, apparently I stuck my hand in like a saucepan of boiling water, but I don't remember that. I've heard the story a million times from my mum, but wiped my memory.
Sometimes your brain, just eliminates those memories. Do you have any scarring or anything?
No, seems to be okay. Got some other scars. Got a massive scar on the bottom of my chin. Fell out like a bunk bed and landed like chin first. That was good.
Yeah, well, scars are signs that you've lived life, although I'm not sure if falling out of a bed counts, but tell people you were wrestling a bear or something.
Yeah. I've got a really good one on my wrist. I've got a good photo where you can basically see the tendons and all that sort of stuff inside. And
whew. What happened?
I was quite drunk and maybe slightly high. And I was like 16 and I got my GCSE results and went to this festival. But somehow I was outside the festival and I was trying to be inside. I don't know how I got out, but I tried to, I was like, oh, I'll just walk over the fence. And then so that it's a bit harder to climb the fence than I'd originally anticipated. And as I kind of came down the other side, I kind of fell off it, but my wrist got caught on it and it kind of, it dug in and scraped upwards. So like my skin kind of moved up, but like blood went everywhere and I thought I was going to die. Then after like half an hour, the blood stopped and you could just see like the insides of my arm, but I was fine. So like I got to the hospital and just had a few hours of just looking at my arm and be like, wow, I can see where my muscles move. And it was pretty freaky.
I can imagine. Good Lord.
Yeah, it was an odd one.
See, you always remember it though. College out here in a place called Santa Barbara in California. It's right on the beach, and they have these just historically famous Halloween parties where they're basically closed down like three or four blocks, and it's just all college kids. It's just complete chaos, no police, no nothing. It was there 25 years ago. We were walking around, and there are cliffs behind it that go down to the beach. Now they're like maybe, I don't know, 15 feet. They're not something you fall off and die. There was some guy who had fallen off and he'd broken his nose. And so his nose was really swollen. And somebody had given him a bottle of lotion and told him, oh, just keep putting lotion on it. And so he's walking around. His nose is huge and it's just shiny as can be. He's got all this lotion on it. I was like, he's going to remember that.
Yeah, jeez. That's awful. Funny.
Yeah, I don't think he's feeling too good the next day.
Yeah. Okay. Last thing is, what is the kindest thing someone has ever done for you?
My mother nearly passed away from stroke. And I found out and was driving like a maniac trying to get to the hospital and got pulled over by a police officer, rightly so. And then he didn't give me a ticket and he actually escorted me to the hospital through traffic. Ooh. And that kind of a thing. And so that was very helpful, particularly if you're in San Diego during rush hour traffic and you can't get anywhere. And that's just, going slightly insane. So he was a very nice guy. I certainly will remember that for a very long time.
Yeah, it's amazing. Some people kind of, they take their job as in like, it's not quite the rules of what they're given. It's more like, okay, I'm a police officer. I'm here to make the world a better place. And they do that rather than, whereas others like, oh, I'm here to follow exactly rule X, Y, Z and can just be complete dicks about it. And you're like, I don't think this is helping them right now. Right. Yeah, he definitely seems to have done the making the world a better place thing. So good for him or her.
Yeah, it was a gentleman. But yeah, I mean, I think people face those decisions all the time in their life. You know, obviously not large ones like that. But I mean, every day you run into little things where you can be nice to people or help them out or ignore them. Hopefully you're nice to them and it comes back around to you eventually. So I don't know if that was the case in this, but I certainly obviously appreciated him doing that. And then she pulled through. So that was good.
That's a nice story. Cool. It's a good thing to end on. Awesome.
Indeed.
Nice. Okay. Well, if you do happen to have anything else you do want to add, then you can. Otherwise, yeah, I guess that's about it.
No, I think we're good.
Cool. I'm also being run but on my flat, so I have to go. Thank you so much.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
All right, sir. Have a good one.
You too. So that was the end of the conversation. Such a cool guy, and it's really great that he made time for the podcast. So let's break down my top tips. Number one. Do what interests you. It's not always about doing the thing that makes you happiest 100% of the time. Doing anything worthwhile will usually entail some pretty difficult or boring moments at some point in time, or just quite a lot of points in time. You're much more likely to be successful with anything that you do if it's something that just fundamentally interests you. And this leads into point two. Automate the boring stuff. When doing anything, you should find the parts that really don't interest you at all and they take up your time. These will often be holding you back from reaching your potential. You want to find ways to automate them as much as possible. For a bootstrapped entrepreneur, this might not be possible straight away, but it should be one of your highest priorities as soon as you have a budget. If you can automate your admin and accounts and stuff that just takes your time and isn't that interesting, you can spend more time doing the interesting thing that delivers value, and thus build a better business or get more experience in whatever it is that you're trying to do. If it turns out the hard, boring thing that you want to automate is the critical part of the idea or skill that you're working on, then clearly this wasn't a thing that interests you and you should be doing something else. Number three, be very selective of your co-founders or co-workers. Don't work with anyone just because they sound like they have the right skills. You need to know that you can deeply trust this person, that you both have the same long-term goals and that you have the complementary skills, and also that they don't have a shady history. So, If you don't already know someone, it might be better to work in a non-binding agreement as a test first, to see if you really both have the same goals and interests, and that it will work in the long term. It can really help you avoid a messy breakup or issues of silent co-founders dragging their feet and just causing lots of mayhem down the line. And of course, avoid some hefty legal fees to deal with the problem. Richard is doing himself out of a job here, to be fair. But, as he says, he would much rather be helping you scale your business up anyway. And as a bonus tip, think about your risks. Richard's business failure led to some huge lessons. Don't take too many loans and leave yourself exposed. Don't have one point of failure. Just because the market seems so strong, it doesn't mean that it will be that way tomorrow. So hedge some of your bets and choose a niche that will be resilient to change. Now, onto books. Richard recommends The Complete Turtle Trader. This book sounds awesome. It is the real-life version of the movie Trading Places, but with 23 participants in the experiment instead of just Eddie Murphy. Now, it sounds like a lot of fascinating insights into the world of trading and just redefining what people think of as an inherent talent that they were born with versus what's just following standard procedures. And on the subject of books, I am very pleased to announce our sponsor today. InstaRead is one of my favorite new tools. InstaRead transforms non-fiction books into 15-minute audiobooks. Each InstaRead gives you all the key insights from the book, along with a synopsis, analysis, and commentary. If you're interested in self-improvement books, business, healthy living, history, psychology, etc., then InstaRead is for you. Thanks to their professional summaries, you'll truly understand what's inside a book without spending weeks on reading it. It just saves you tons of time. I personally find it just a great way to get a basic knowledge of some of the best books that you simply don't have time to read all of them. And it's also just a great screening tool. So if you find the InstaRead summary really fascinating, you know that it's probably worth reading the full book and you don't risk buying books that waste your time or money. I really enjoyed their summaries of Atomic Habits by James Clear and The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Now, some books you really should just revisit several times, and InstaRead is just a perfect hack for reminding you of the important lessons that you learned, but without needing to reread the whole thing again. So just check it out at InstaRead.co. They have an unrestricted free trial for 7 days, and they are offering our listeners a 20% discount on the annual plan. You can use the code GROWTHMINDSET in one word at the checkout. So that's InstaRead.co, not .com, and the code is GROWTHMINDSET. And you can get smarter today with InstaRead. Boom! You've just listened to an episode of the Growth Mindset Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe on your preferred app and give me a good rating, as these go a really long way. If you are unable to give good feedback right now, try sharing the show with a friend who will, or just wait for the show to improve. If you have any ideas for the show or you just want to chat, then please reach out to me on Twitter at Sam Harris Tweets or Instagram at Sam Jam Snaps. Show notes and other links to topics discussed in the episodes are available at the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening. Give yourself a big hug from me. If you're with a friend, give them a hug as well. And I hope you enjoy your next podcast.